It's now time for your favorite guilty pleasure.
The E2 Books Show.
Check your innocence at the door and welcome two of the men your mama warned you about.
Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
Welcome back to the E2 Books Show. We are on episode 3 of season 1, and we've got a great guest this week, Scott. Wayne Stennett, the author of the Jesse McDermott series. And what a great guy.
He was a great guy. He was super.
Absolutely. And great, great stories. I love, well, I'm not going to actually tell the story. You can let him tell it because it's better. But there's one story I just love that he told about his, when he finally went full-time writer. It's a classic. And I hope it ends up in a book someday. But Scott, what do we have going on in our writing world?
In our world? Well, yes. we're still working on our Arum book together. Back in your hands once again.
As usual. I'm very excited about the Arum series.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
I think we're within striking distance now. We're in this weird period where it's... I don't know if you have the same feeling, Scott, but it's like it's uphill climb to a certain point in the book, and then suddenly you get over the crest, and it's like, it's full speed ahead towards the ending.
And you're like, wait for me, wait for me.
Exactly.
Story, wait for me.
And I'm starting to sense that we're about to head, go over the crest there, and it's going to be all downhill from there. So I'm looking forward to that. And I really think this is going to be something that our readers are going to enjoy.
I agree. I think a lot of people are going to like this book and this whole series. It's been wicked fun writing it, So if it's like half as fun to read it as it is to write it, we might sell one or two.
One can only hope. But speaking of good reads, Jesse McDermott series by Wayne Stennett. Enjoy good the interview. Stuff. Wayne Stennett is an American author of almost 30 books. He's also a veteran of the United States Marine Corps, as is his main character, Jesse McDermott. Between those careers, Stennett has worked as a deckhand, commercial fisherman, dive master, taxi driver, construction manager, and truck driver, among many other things. He lives with his wife and youngest daughter in the South Carolina Lowcountry, just a few miles from Parris Island, where he went to boot camp. They also have 3 grown children, 4 grandchildren, a crazy Carolina dog, and a large cage full of parakeets. And Wayne, speaking of crazy dogs, thanks so much for coming on this show, because Scott and I are as close to crazy dogs as you'll hope to find, or hope not to meet, I should say.
Yeah.
But thanks so much for coming on.
I'm one of those guys that could just never find his true calling in life.
Well, the joke is back when somebody was introducing Jack Benny on a show back in the day, and they were listing off all of his accomplishments and things he'd done, and maybe it was Fred Allen or somebody came on later and was like, what's the matter? Can't you hold a steady job?
That's been my problem. Never could.
Well, you've obviously... Easy. Yeah, I understand that. But you've obviously had a lot of different jobs over the years. Everything from deckhand to truck driver. But was writing always something that was in the back of your mind? And how did you make the decision to just, walk away from more traditional workforce and pursue that career as a full-time author?
Well, I wouldn't say writing. I mean, I've always looked at authors as like movie stars and things like that. And I'm not that. I like to tell stories. And I've always, ever since I was a little kid, we'd a bunch of kids would get together in our fort, and I'd be the one to tell the story. And I'd tell stories to my kids and to get them to go to bed. Just make them up as I go. And that's basically how I write. I just sit down with a blank screen and start writing.
I was always the one that got kicked out of the fort for farting, so.
And now he's a professional farter.
That's so. Right. I made that a career. There you go.
Oh, that would go over well in our forts because we had fart contests.
Well, so you've had this, a gift for storytelling all your life. What pushed you into the decision to finally, make this a career?
Well, it was a whole bunch of circumstances involved. One was a really jam-packed garage that could easily hold 5 or 6 cars, and we couldn't even get a bicycle in. And so I started cleaning out the garage, and I came across an old box that had a whole bunch of the really big 5.5-inch floppy disks, you know, that were floppy. And I'd written these short stories years and years ago when I was working as an estimator, and I had them stored on that floppy disk. And my wife found my divorce papers from my first wife, and on the back I'd handwritten a whole chapter on the back of all these pages because I didn't have any paper. And she made the comment that that it was, you know, it was okay, and maybe I should take it up again. And then a fellow Patriot Guard writer, Colonel Shelton, he made several comments several times that I should write a book. I'm sure he meant something of a political nature. He didn't mean fiction, but he motivated me to sit down and do it. And I found the floppy disk, and then all I had to do was find a computer that it would work. It had a floppy
disk in it. Yeah, I was going to ask about that. That had to be the most challenging part of the whole process.
It definitely was. We finally found one, and I managed to transfer them to CD and get them onto a laptop and used the best of a whole bunch of short stories to write the first novel. Nice. And from then, I couldn't, the gates were open. There was nothing I could do. It's just the flood was coming, and all I could do was put on some really high boots.
Definitely. Well, how many projects were you in before you, was it the truck driving that was your last job?
Yeah, I was a over-the-road truck driver specializing in over-dimensional freight. Mm-hmm. We had a contract for Michelin tires, hauling tires out of Lexington, South Carolina to the big open pit mines out in the Rockies, Utah, Nevada, and Wyoming. And oversized loads can only move during the daylight. In the wintertime, that's, you know, only 8 hours out of the day. So I'd have a lot of downtime, and I only sleep 6 hours, so I started... Once I started writing, I couldn't stop. I wrote the first four books in the sleeper.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, I was never in the service, but I do have the honor of being a Marine Corps parent. My son was in for 5 years active, and I'm wondering how much of what you learned and experienced while you were in the Corps found its way into your writing. I mean, obviously, Jesse is a veteran also, but beyond the obvious, how much of your time in the Corps made its way into your work?
Well, I met a lot of characters in the Corps, and all my characters in my books they're not based on real people, but little parts of them are, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the self-discipline, that was probably the biggest factor in how I was able to continue writing and make it a career and actually earn money from it.
Right.
And, but that self-discipline and the motivation is what's kept me going all these years now. It's 8 years since I handed the keys to the truck.
Right.
And how did, when you did hand over those keys, I'm just curious, how did that feel? Was that, were you frightened? Were you relieved or?
It was already planned.
Yeah.
My plan was, and this was, I made the plan like in March of 2014. And my plan was that I was going to hire a limousine and I was going to go to the yard and just park in the yard and wait until the boss came out. Because, you know, a limousine in a truck yard sticks out like a sore thumb. Everybody's going to start crowding around before long the boss will come out. And when he was come out, I was going to roll the window down, hand him the keys and say, I'm needed elsewhere. Bye. But that didn't happen. I came back to the yard on May 14th, and the boss pushed the wrong buttons, told me I had to move into a different truck, one of the older trucks. I'd just gotten a brand new truck. It was the first new truck I'd ever had in 15 years of truck driving, and I didn't like it. The old truck was just a piece of crap, and smoke. People driving it had been smoking, and I was like, no, I'm not going to move into that truck. I'm just going to stay in this truck. And he says, well, you don't have the option. I said, well, yeah, I do. Here's the keys. Take the CB radio, my tools, everything that's in the truck, my blankets, pillows, everything. Just give it to the next driver. And I walked away. I had a smile on my face, and he had the most puzzled expression on his.
Well, you made the right decision, but please tell me that one of the, either has made or will make into one of your books a scene with the limousine. I think that would be a classic.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Well,
but Jesse's not nearly as presumptuous as I am.
Speaking of that, you know, that series clearly strikes a chord with readers. It's garnered thousands of reviews, highly rated, each new release, you know, eagerly awaited by fans. I see them posting, like, where is it? When's the next one? All this kind of stuff. Is the main character, McDermott, based on you beyond simply the veteran aspect?
I like to say that I am Jesse McDermott, except that Jesse's 6'3", has all his hair. He's slim and trim and muscular and good looking, but we have the same moral compass. If that's any consolation. But yeah, he thinks the way I do. He reasons things out the same way. He has the same attitudes about everything in general. Mm-hmm. But he goes about it in a different way.
Right. So you're headed, and you touched on this, the discipline aspect from the Marine Corps. But so you're headed toward 30 books by Christmas, I believe, if I did that research properly. What is your process of writing like, and how do you maintain that level of productivity? Do you have any tips or tricks that you do?
It'll be 29 by Christmas.
29.
I think. I could be wrong. But
decent number either way.
Yeah.
I have a schedule, and I stick to it. Mm-hmm. I wish I had a nickel for every there I go with the hat again. I wish I had a nickel for every author that told me, oh man, I would have had my book ready on time, but yeah, Christmas just snuck up on me.
Yep.
Well, Christmas comes on the same day every year. How can it sneak up on you? Hey, you take a calendar and you put a big red X on December 25th. You're not going to work that day. You're not going to work on New Year's Day. You're not going to work on Thanksgiving. You're not going to work on your wife or your husband's birthday, Valentine's Day, spring break, all these different things. So if you start with a calendar and cross off all the days that you're not going to work, then you know the days that you are.
Don't
and then it's just a matter of
wife's birthday. Got it.
So that's a mistake you've been making, Scott, this whole time.
34 years.
Then it's just a matter of how much can you do in a day.
Right.
And right.
I like to write 1,000 words, 5 days a week, 1,000 words, 5,000 words a week, and 14, 15 weeks, you have a novel.
Yep.
Do you believe in writer's block?
No. I've never. I'm sure it exists, but I've never experienced it. I mean, there's times, there's certain scenes that I have to really just sit down and force myself to write.
Right.
But I just sit down and force myself to write it. It's only 1,000 words. Most people write more than that on Facebook in a day.
True. I was at your website earlier today. I got the impression that you stop shaving while you're writing. Is this true? And your readers can trace the progress by how long your beard's getting?
I did up until this year. And this summer was just too brutally hot, so I shaved early. But I shave on release day, and then it gets about 8 inches long by the time the next one comes out in 4 months.
I just think that's the greatest idea of all time.
My web designer came up with that whip, that beardometer.
Yeah.
that's really dumb. But
and but then no she, one else is doing that showed, dumb thing.
Then she showed it to me. I said, that's cool.
How does your wife thing, does she look forward to release day in those cases, or does she like the longer look?
Well, the release day scares her because the beard grows very slowly over 4 months, and then boom, it's gone. And when I walk out of the bathroom and I'm clean shaven for the first time in 4 months, she's grabbing at guns and knives.
Right. Call 911. There's a strange man in my house. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I remember the first time I shaved when my daughter was still young, and I came out of the bathroom and she was just in tears. I want my real daddy back.
Well, had she ever seen you without one?
That would have been
shocking.
I had actually grown that starting right about the time we were expecting her. So yeah, she'd always
seen it. I don't shave completely. I leave the mustache and the goatee.
Yep. Yep.
But I trim that down to like an eighth or a quarter of an inch. But and the sides, they're just buzzed. I don't actually use. I haven't used a razor in, since 1981, 40 years.
Wow.
Since I got out of the Corps.
Yeah, had enough of that.
Yeah. My son hasn't shaved, I don't think, once since he got out. The last pictures I have of him clean shaven were our drive home from Pendleton. We stopped at the Grand Canyon. I took a bunch of pictures there, and he looks like he's about 12 still.
They all do, man. Yeah. My nephew's a master gunnery sergeant. That's the highest rank you can get in the Marine Corps, enlisted rank. And he's been in for 22 years now. And I see him, and I think, you know, I still see him as a little kid.
Right.
And then I meet all these drill instructors when I go over to Parris Island, and they're all younger than my kids.
Right, right.
It's like, oh, geez, totally different.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I never looked so young.
But you're clearly doing well in your author career. What does success look like to you?
Well, I just released a book on Monday, and my narrator texted me Monday evening and said, "Hey, you're number 48. Congratulations." And I hadn't looked at it until then.
Right.
The release, you know, they happen as a matter of course now. Once I finish writing it, I turn it over to other people and for the editing and formatting and everything.
Right.
And I'm pretty much done with it. And so being able to just sit back and let things happen at their own pace, to me, that's the epitome of success.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it.
Yep, right.
I've got a sailboat. I've got a little John boat. I've got two little racing sailboats, and be able to just go and do whatever you want to do at any time. Every day is a work day.
Right.
Well, not really. Just the ones that end with Y. But I go in. I come into the office, and I don't work. I don't write on Thursday and Friday. Thursday and Friday, my stepson lives with us now, and he's a chef, and those are his days off.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of worked around that. So now I take Thursday and Friday off, and we go and do something together. The beaches are a lot less crowded on a weekday.
Right.
And just being able to make your own schedule like that, that's success.
Yeah.
How much you make, that's just a byproduct.
I like that.
I mean, that's really what everybody works for, is to have control over their own time, because, you know, time is our most precious asset, really.
Absolutely. You're only given so many minutes in a lifetime.
Yep.
And what you do with those minutes determines your lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I have a nice lifestyle now. It's not, I don't have to fold tarps in a 50 mile an hour minus 20 degree snowy environment anymore. I don't have to throw chains over a 20 foot tall load, not 20 foot, but you get it.
Yeah. Oh man. Now you have, thanks for coming on our show, our little show. You have your own podcast, I believe. Can you tell us about that and what's it called and where can people find it?
Talk Right Podcast is a live stream that we do, my narrator and I. Nick Sullivan. Nick's a classically trained actor. He's been on stage and screen. If you've ever watched Law and Order, you've seen him.
Oh.
He was the guy that didn't look like he did in the previous episode. He's like a shapeshifter. He can,
right.
he can transform himself. But Nick and I had this idea almost 2 years ago. And we finally came to fruition a year ago last May. And since I'm an author, he's a narrator. He's also a writer now too. We decided we would interview other author narrator teams. And we had so much fun with it because everybody, I mean, they've got their own stories to tell. And we always get around to every show. It gets around to Nick asking the guest narrator what his kryptonite voice is. Knicks is Chicago. He does not do a Chicago accent.
What's yours, Craig?
Probably Scottish.
No.
The R's get me. I have a hard time with it. Or Australian. Because the thing about Australian is no Australian will ever admit that any non-Australian has done a good job with an Australian accent.
Right, right.
It doesn't matter how good you are at it. If you're not actually Australian, you'll get dinged for sure.
Craig, that sucked!
There are some Australians that do great American accents. So
yep. Yeah, no, yeah, definitely the other way is fine. But
what's that guy's name that plays the character House?
Oh, Hugh Laurie.
Yeah, he's Australian.
Yep, and you wouldn't know
him. To hear him on the show, you'd never think it.
Yep.
Yeah. There is. Now, what do you, you've been in the writing community for a while now. What's one thing that you love most about the writing community and maybe one thing that you would change about it?
Well, the one thing I love about it is the people that I meet. There's some very creative individuals out there, and they're more than happy to share anything that they know. And when I first started, a very good friend of mine now, Michael Reisig, bought my first book and read it and enjoyed it. And he wrote to me and said how much he liked it. But when I was reading his first book, I realized that we both had the same character, a Jamaican guy named Rufus. So when I got his email, I was thinking, oh no, this guy's going to sue me.
Right.
But he just went on and on about how he enjoyed it and what I could do to make it better and to continue at it. He sent me his book, a book about writing, and I've just kind of continued that and passed it on to others. And we can't be competitors. Mm-hmm. I mean, I write pretty fast. I'm not as fast as a lot of people, but a book every 4 months is pretty fast.
Yep.
And somebody sits down and reads that book in 10 hours.
Right. Right.
So how can you possibly compete with others?
Right.
So we help each other. We have our own group, Tropical Authors, and that's where we get a lot of our guests from on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we all write kind of beachy kind of stories around the ocean, boats, islands, things that go boom, and we share a lot of information between each other, and it's very helpful. Mm. I like the camaraderie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There does seem to be, and when you write about like the tropical thriller writer community, like David Barron's is another one.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? There's something about water, the ocean, that draws people. It has an effect on me as well. What do you think that about it is? What the magic of that?
Evolution.
Yeah.
I mean, we all came from the sea. The salinity of your tears is exactly the same as the ocean.
Mm.
And we're neutrally buoyant. We float in water and in seawater. We sink like a rock in freshwater.
Nice.
But we are ocean dwellers, and not everybody's been to the beach, but everybody who has can relate to the story because they've experienced it.
Right.
They stood on the shore and had the waves wash over their feet and then recede, and you know how your heels start to sink down in the sand?
Yep, yep.
If you've never been to the beach, you never experienced that. But people who have, and if I write about it in the correct way, they say, oh man, yeah, this guy, he's been to the beach before.
Right, right.
Yep. So it's write what you know.
I think anytime someone can read your work and know either directly or metaphorically that you've been to the beach, you're doing something right.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I've read books where it's caused me to taste things, smell things, mm-hmm. feel mm-hmm. things, like feel things other than an emotion, I know what that feels like. It's writing is a magical thing. And again, I think you're right that there's that.
I like to use all five senses when I write.
Right. Yeah.
And most authors, they really only concentrate on the visual. Yeah. They describe what things look like and what a person looks like. But there's a lot more to it than that. There's sounds and tastes and scents and the texture. And if you include all that, then your setting actually becomes a character.
That's so true.
Yep.
So true. What is one book that you wish you had written?
One book that I wish that somebody else wrote that I wish I'd written?
Yeah. Some book that you look at that like, oh, that's a...
Where is Joe Merchant by Jimmy Buffett?
I have not read that.
Oh, Jimmy's a great storyteller. He just tells most of his stories in 4 minutes.
Right. I saw.
But he's written Where is Joe Merchant? I think that was his first novel. Salty Piece of Land was another one. He's got a collection of short stories. Pirate Looks at 40, or Pirate Looks at 50, the memoir. And he's written quite a few books. But Pirate Looks at 40 is just so quirky and nutty and a lot in the style of Carl Hiaasen. But Jimmy's a great storyteller. I've read that book at least a dozen times. Wow. And anything by John D. MacDonald. Right. If I could write one sentence like John D., then I'm doing well.
Right. I think you're doing well for yourself. What is a common myth about the craft of writing that people seem to cling to?
Common myth. Jeez. I guess most people think that writers are extreme introverts, and a lot of writers are. By and large, the writing community is it's a very sedentary lifestyle. You sit alone. You're alone with your thoughts, but not all writers are introverts. A lot of us are extroverts,
right?
And we get out there and mix up with people, and a lot of people that you would never think had a creative bone in their body are writers.
Right?
They just haven't come out.
Well, there is a lot of shame involved. I'm a writer.
Yeah, I don't remember who said it, but it's something like writing is something you do in the dark and wash your hands afterward. To look up to who I can attribute that quote to, I don't recall now. Well, Wayne, it has been so great having you on the show today. You've been amazing, and we love your work, and we can't wait to for your next book to come out. So again, thank you so much. But before you go, where can listeners find you online?
www.waynestinnett.com. See, it's written right there.
And I will put it there. Great setup, Wayne. Thank you so much. I'm serious. Thank you, Wayne. I really appreciate your time.
I appreciate it, Craig. Right.
Thanks a lot, Wayne.
All right, Scott.
The E2 Books Show.
E2 Books Show
by Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.